pretty bleak. Yet this was the first time I'd been alone for several weeks, and in that sense, it could not have been more luxurious. I almost didn't know what to do with myself. I felt dizzy and knew that I was about to fall apart. Then I didn't feel quite so private after all, since I guessed that I must be under surveillance. I couldn't stop thinking about the image of my sobbing face that I had inadvertently captured in Clesthora's eye after Orlo's anathem. The first time he had died. Some instinct told me to burrow. I went into the bathroom, turned off the light, turned on the shower, and ducked under the water. Once the temperature had stabilized, I collapsed back against the wall, sank down until I was all folded up over the drain and utterly lost control of myself. A lot went down that drain. I had been through adventures that might have made for interesting times and good stories if Orlo hadn't been vaporized before my eyes. Our aircraft, along with several others, had flown to the next island upwind and landed on a beach, scattering a crowd of locals who had gathered there to drink wine and watch the eruption of Ekba. Other aircraft had run out of fuel and ditched in the sea. Since they had jettisoned their life rafts to make room for passengers, many of these would have drowned had it not been for the Avout, who could easily make their spheres into lifebuoys. A second wave of airborne commandos had plucked them out of the water and brought them to the same beach where the rest of us had sat down. This had been commandeered by the secular power and cordoned off. Tents had been dropped on us, and we had erected our own camp. New Orathena, complete with a canvas cloister in the middle and a digital alarm clock on a stick where Provener was celebrated. We had said the aught of requiem for Orlo and the others who had not survived. Meanwhile, the military had pitched larger tents around us, marched us through naked, hosed us down with unspecified chemical solutions, given us plastic bags in which to void urine and excrement. We had spent a few days living off military rations, wearing paper coveralls that we were supposed to burn when they got dirty, being called in at random times to be interviewed, phototyped, and biometrically scanned. Around noon on the second day, a big fixed-wing aircraft had landed on a nearby road that had been made into a temporary aerodrome. A little while later, a caravan of vehicles had come up the beach, carrying civilians, some of whom had been dressed in bolts and cords. My name had been called. I had walked to the camp gate, where I had encountered, across a safe, non-infectious expanse of empty sand, a contingent from Tredegar. There had been a couple of dozen, all told. Until they had begun speaking to me in perfect Orth, I had not even recognized some of them as Avout, because the style of their bolts and cords was so different from what we wore at Edhar. They originated from many different continents. I had recognized only one of them, a Veiler who had helped save me in Masht. I had caught her eye and made a hint of a bow, and she had responded in kind. The FAE of this group had said something about Orlo that was actually quite respectful and well put. He had then informed me that I would help them prepare the givens for shipment to the Convox and return to Tredegar with them the next day. By givens, of course, he had meant the box of vials and the body of the dead geometer, both of which had been kept on ice the whole time we'd been here. Meanwhile, Saman had been having a similar conversation with one of his brethren, a small detachment of Ida, segregated in their own vehicle. Thereafter, it had all been work, which had probably been a good thing, since it had meant less brooding time for me. Since Orlo had traded the rest of his life for the theoretical knowledge contained in the body of the geometer, preparing it for shipment to Tredegar had given me an opportunity to show it the same respect as I would have shown the body of Orlo, had we been able to give him a normal burial. Two lives had been sacrificed, one of Arb, one of some other world, to bring us this knowledge. In what free time I did have, I talked to Cord. At first, I only spoke of my feelings. Later, Cord began to share her views about what had happened, and it became obvious that she was interpreting the whole thing from a Kelk's point of view. It seemed that Magister Sark had got himself a convert. His words, back in Masht, might have made only a faint impression on her, but something about what we had lived through at Orithena had made it all seem true in her mind. And this didn't seem like the right time for me to try to convince her otherwise. It was, I realized, like the broken stove all over again. What was the point of my having a truer explanation of these things if it could only be understood by Avout, who devoted their whole lives to Theoryx? Cord, independent soul that she was, wouldn't want to live her life under the sway of such ideas any more than she'd want to cook breakfast with a machine that she couldn't understand and fix.